Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. It was an impromptu speech on the 1960 presidential campaign trail. John F. Kennedy proposed the idea of young American volunteers helping people in developing nations. They would provide health care and education. The idea sparked so much enthusiasm among college students that JFK promised to create a Peace Corps if elected. The Peace Corps still continues with 8,600 volunteers in 77 countries. This month marks the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps, and we'll be talking with returned volunteers about how that experience shaped their lives and their careers. Later this hour, we'll hear about the founding and the sometimes complicated history of the Peace Corps as an enduring legacy of the Kennedy administration. But first, let's meet some former Peace Corps volunteers now living right here in Central Ohio. First up is Mary Merrifield. She's a professor at the School of Teaching and Learning at Ohio State University. She served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Sierra Leone in West Africa from 1977 to 1979. Mary, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Mary, why did you join?
Well, I'd been teaching, actually, in Atlanta, and I'd been learning about Africa, developed a course on Africa. I really wanted to go there, and I didn't want to go as a tourist. I wanted to go and live and see what the cultures were like, you know, learn about it from people's perspective. And Peace Corps just happened to send me an invitation, one of those things they send out to a lot of teachers, I think, at exactly the right time.
So you were already, you had already started your career. You were a recent graduate or in grad school.
Yeah, I actually had a master's in geography and had been teaching for 6 years.
So how hard was it to give up your career, put your career on hold?
Well, you know, I saw going to Sierra Leone as a really extension of my career. I was going to learn more about teaching. I was going to learn more about the world, which has always been my interest.
What was your what was the reaction of your family and your friends when you decided to sort of put your career on hold and continue your career, as you say, in Africa?
Well, actually, my students, I was teaching in high school, they were all excited. You know, they wanted postcards every week because we didn't have email back in those days. My parents were not real happy about this because they had the old stereotypes of Africa. But, you know, in general, everybody was pretty supportive.
Describe your first moments as you stepped off the plane or you arrived in Sierra Leone.
Well, actually, and I use this with my own students. You know, I teach social studies and global education in the College of Education and Human Ecology. And part of my experiences from Sierra Leone, I definitely share with a lot of my students. And one is that, you know, I thought I knew a lot about Africa before I left. I had taken courses developed courses, had taught, and the way Peace Corps worked was we flew from the U.S. through Liberia into Sierra Leone. We didn't stop at all. We went up to what's called Mile 91, which is up country, 91 miles. And I got out, and, you know, as I was walking around and trying to find, you know, a facility, shall we say, and also just to see what was there to look at, I realized that nothing that I had learned in grad school or I taught myself actually helped me at that point in time. And then later in the small town, Chibwema, where I became a teacher, what I realized is all those cultural knowledge that I thought I'd been taught wasn't authentic. It didn't really help me in interacting or in teaching or in understanding the culture where I lived. And so that kind of sent me on a path to, we should be teaching about cultures in a way so people could interact with people from those cultures, whether they're people coming, because they're Sierra Leoneans in Columbus, or whether we're going to another part of the world. So, it was the beginning of me kind of rethinking a lot of assumptions about what we learn in school.
We're looking at the Peace Corps as it celebrates its 50th anniversary here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann. Mary Merrifield joins us now. She's an OSU professor and former Peace Corps volunteer. I mean, going from Atlanta, I mean, in the 1970s, still, you know, it's not what it is today, but it's still a very cosmopolitan area, good size, very good size American city. Then you go to West Africa. What did it look like?
Well, you know, There was a big difference, of course, from big cities and small towns in Sierra Leone. Freetown's, you know, a big cosmopolitan city was then. It you know, still is, although Sierra Leone's gone through a decade of war. When I got to, I've never lived in a really small town, and when I got to Shibuema, where I was going to be teaching for 2 years, it was a town of about 3,000 people. It had one main street. And, you know, I didn't have any electricity or running water for 2 years. And that does take some adjustment, but, and I, you know, slept under mosquito net. All of that takes some adjustment, but, you know, I was prepared for that. I mean, Peace Corps does a really good job of training. And I, yeah, I've never felt the least bit deprived. I mean, I'm one of the few Americans, I think, that understands you can be really happy and enjoy life without some of the things that we think we have to have in this country.
What was your most challenging moment during those 2 years?
Well, I had some students. They were in Form 4, you know, the upper part of high school, who had actually fought against some government troops the year before. And they wanted to explain to me why they were older. They were like 18 and 19 instead of the age that would usually be in that. And I didn't know whether to sympathize with them or just to assume that's the way things were. I mean, part of it is, you know, culturally to know what's appropriate to say when people are sharing things with you that, you know, for most of us as Americans are quite horrifying. But, you know, I learned to just take people as they are, and certainly a lot more I think Peace Corps volunteers all learn more flexibility, more open-mindedness. I think that's one of the most wonderful things about those experiences.
So was it a – did you have a confrontation with these students, or was it just
difficult dealing with them?
You
know, they were really good students. They were operating in, you know, within a framework where because they were Mendi, they were being discriminated against by the government. Does that sound familiar? And you know, they wanted to do the best they could. They were very hard workers, and yet they were felt like they were behind. And they, you know, they just wanted to explain to me why how things were the way they were, because there was secret police in Shibuema. And as it turned out, the photographer I went to with to get things photos developed was Fode Sanko. I don't know if you know his name, but he was the head of the RUF 10 years later and became one of the mass murderers of West Africa. So, you know, there's just a lot going on that as an American who had been, you know, really quite protected, I had to make sense of it. You know, I had to get people to explain to me, you know, the politics of things and also, you know, cultural norms that I wasn't used to.
And that's why you went, to learn these things.
Exactly.
And some of those lessons were difficult to learn or hard to get to the bottom of them,
right.
I'm sure.
And that's what I, you know, I want my students at OSU to appreciate. There are other ways of putting the world together, other ways of making sense of things, and we need to try to understand.
What was your most rewarding moment or experience?
Oh, well, I met my future husband there,
there you go.
Colombo. He was a Peace Corps volunteer building, he's an engineer building bridges and roads. And, you know, it was one of those Peace Corps romances that lasted 33 years later. We're very happy.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah, so that's another reason to join the Peace Corps. You never know.
Aside from that, obviously personally rewarding, can you relate a story or an experience where you really said, this is why I'm here?
Well, you know, I think it comes down to the conversations I would have with students and teachers outside of the formal classroom where, you know, they're getting, I mean, while I was there, a one-party state was voted in and the ballot boxes never came to Shibuema. People waited in the court barrier all day long and they didn't have a chance to vote, and yet it was reported as, you know, 98% for the one-party state. And I think that for me, trying to understand the realities of the people around me who saw things in a different way than I did, and sometimes we did it over, like, there was a teacher's co-op bar, and we'd all gather in the afternoon after school and play Scrabble, and they always beat me at Scrabble in English, which is so embarrassing. And we'd, you know, we'd drink beer, eat what they call groundnuts, we call peanuts. And those conversations, just about life, you know, where everybody's equal and we're sitting there talking and enjoying each other, You know, that's what's led me to believe that that's what I need American teachers to do with people different from themselves, is find ways informally to enjoy each other and have those kinds of conversations that happen when people get together.
Yeah, it's a great way to see that we're not all that different. We all have the same, you know, desires and worries, and we all put our pants on one leg at a time and things like that.
Yeah, and also just to really appreciate people who, you know, most Americans would feel sorry for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, these are great people. The teachers were wonderful. I definitely learned a lot from them. The fact that we need to understand that Americans can learn a lot from West Africans, which, you know, sometimes there's the old stereotypes of Africa that get in the way.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Mary Merrifield. She's a former Peace Corps volunteer as we look at the Peace Corps 50 years after its formation by President John F. Kennedy on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We'd like to hear from you. Were you a Peace Corps volunteer? Do you know somebody who is in the Peace Corps, a member of your immediate family, perhaps a son or a daughter? 292-8513 is our phone number, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mary, were you a politically active person before you joined the Peace Corps? And if so, did you have to leave those politics in the States?
Well, you know, my whole interest in Africa actually grew out of my first degrees in what they call Black history back in those days. And I grew up under segregation in the South, and I was really trying to understand racism. And in trying to understand American racism, I think it eventually leads a lot of us to Africa. And so, you know, I was active in Andrew Young's election.
Mm-hmm. Former mayor.
Does that date me?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, part of what I cared about when I lived in the States is what led me to do that, and I think that happens to a lot of volunteers. You know, there are global connections related to the issues we care about, and certainly, you know, racism and social justice and caring about people in other world regions has always been there for me.
Mm-hmm. How about attitudes towards American foreign policy? Did you have disagreements with the American government and how they treated African nations?
Well, is there anybody who doesn't have disagreements with you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, I've lived in other parts of Africa, and, you know, one of the other kinds of things that happens, I was working in Kenya when there was a drought and Americans were sending in yellow corn, and I was doing research on social studies and national development. Every school I went to, people would ask me, isn't this laced with something to make us infertile? That's why it's yellow, because they were used to white, what they call white maize.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's hard, even in the kinds of things that I do research on or you know, what I teach, you know, politics comes into everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's just part of trying to understand how people make sense of the world, and I try to keep my own personal politics out of it, although my students would probably tell you that's very hard for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Mary Merrifield, OSU professor and a former Peace Corps volunteer. Thanks for joining us here on
All
Sides.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Appreciate it. Coming up after the break, what drives the current Peace Corps volunteer? That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We keep hearing that Libya is a tribal country, that pro-Gaddafi forces include mercenaries from other parts of Africa, that the mercurial Libyan leader promoted himself as the leader of a unified Africa. But are all Africans in Libya mercenaries? Does he really call himself Africa's King of Kings? I'm Neil Conan, Libya, Gaddafi, and Africa. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon. It starts at 2 right here on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 26 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. Partly sunny skies today and a high of 42 degrees. Clouds tonight and a low of 30 degrees. Mostly cloudy for Tuesday and a high of 53.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Wexner Center for the Arts, presenting Baobab, creative puppetry and mask work and live music on traditional African instruments. Make Baobab inspiring for all ages. March 11th and 12th in Mershon Auditorium. Details and tickets at wexarts.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher with guest host Mike Thompson continues on 89.7 NPR News.
It will not be easy. None of the men and women will be paid a salary. They will live at the same level as the citizens of the country which they're sent to, doing the same work, eating the same food, speaking the same language.
That was President John F. Kennedy speaking on March 1st, 1961, as he established the Peace Corps. This is the Peace Corps' 50th anniversary, and that's what we are focusing on during this hour on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We welcome to the studio two volunteers, former volunteers, one more recent than the other. Stephen Hills, he served in the Peace Corps in Venezuela from 1965 to 1967. He now directs the Center for International Business Education and Research at Ohio State University's Fisher College of Business, and he coordinates the Fisher School's Peace Corps MBA program. Stephen, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you.
And Kristen Mallory, she's a graduate research associate in public health at OSU, who joined the Peace Corps in 2007. She worked in the rural coastal province of Ecuador. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you.
Kristen, let's start with you. The Peace Corps is so 1960s. Why on earth would you join in 2007?
Well, I had always liked volunteering, serving people, and the Peace Corps had always seemed like the ultimate opportunity for that. So it had actually been a childhood dream that I had always kind of wanted to do, sort of came in and out. And then my senior year, I applied just as sort of a backup if, you know, grad school didn't work out. But in the end, it ended up being my first choice. So,
you said the dream began as a child. I mean, where did that come from?
I honestly don't know who introduced the idea to me, but I remember my best friend and I growing up in grade school, we used to always say, when we graduate college, we're going to join the Peace Corps. And that was always kind of, you know, our dream.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't have parents who were former Peace Corps volunteers or relatives who had joined? Or
No, I was the first in my family.
Mm-hmm. So. What's your favorite story from your service in Ecuador?
Gosh, there's so many. Let's see. I mean, it was definitely a roller coaster in the beginning. It was really hard. I didn't know Spanish, so every day was extremely challenging. Thinking I understood what was going on, but really had no idea because of the language barrier. In the beginning, it was funny because I was always kind of made the center of attention, whether I wanted to be or not. And I remember I was in a big community dance, about 200 people, and all of a sudden I heard my name called, and it was like, what, what? And I was put in the middle of this group and had to just dance by myself in front of everyone. So, you know, memories like that, just remembering feeling completely humiliated, but kind of letting myself be humiliated, and kind of, it was so humbling, and, mm-hmm. you know, now I can laugh about it.
Well, it had to have been welcoming, too. I mean, they obviously wanted to
definitely
to show you off and put you at the center of attention, I guess.
That's right.
We're speaking about the Peace Corps on its 50th anniversary here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you've been a Peace Corps volunteer, we'd like to hear from you, 292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Stephen, OSU, you direct the Peace Corps program for OSU's Fisher College of Business, the MBA program. An MBA Peace Corps volunteer. It sounds like an oxymoron.
Well, the program actually was developed a number of years ago and has is no longer working as we originally thought. But there is an opportunity for people to do Peace Corps service first and then come into the MBA program. There's also an opportunity to negotiate a Peace Corps service in the middle of the MBA program. Mm-hmm. But I think it's you have to catch up with the current MBA students, because a number of our MBA students are doing remarkable things in nonprofit organizations. They're interested in sustainability. They're interested in microcredit. They are going to as many places around the world as they have opportunities to do. And as soon as we change to semesters, we're going to have an international experience requirement for all MBAs, which will change things considerably in the Fisher College.
The experience that these students have or the former Peace Corps volunteers that come to your program. How does it differ from what you experienced in Venezuela in the mid-1960s?
I think that today people are thinking more about sustainable business. In the 1960s, there was a good bit of skepticism about whether business and economic development were compatible with each other. Now that no longer is the case, but rather people are asking, how do you mix the profit motive with economic growth and economic development?
Because of the whole world is flat, Thomas Friedman, mm-hmm. we've become a much smaller planet. Does that only fuel the interest and the importance, stress the importance of Peace Corps volunteers and programs like this?
Well, I certainly think so. Anyone who is going into the business world today will very quickly come into some sort of acquaintance with the international connections of the business that they're involved in. If it's sourcing of materials, sourcing of products, or whether it's on the marketing side and looking for customers in all parts of the world, it's a very, very different world than it was when I was in the Peace Corps.
We're speaking about the Peace Corps and its 50th anniversary with a couple of former volunteers here on All Sides with Ann Fisher at 89.7 NPR News. Let's go to the phones. And Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Is that me you're talking to?
Yes. Go ahead, sir.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much for having this program. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in the Central African Republic in 1979-1980.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your experience.
Well, I taught English in a middle school, about 800 students, and I taught 9th and 10th grade English, so I had about 300 students that I met every day. So I had four classes of either 50 or 75 students in a class. I really appreciated listening to Mary's comments because my experience was somewhat similar, no electricity, no running water, lived in a provincial capital, and it was a challenging experience at times, but so rewarding, and it has stuck with me all these years, and I continue to try to promote the Peace Corps to this day.
Great. Thanks for sharing your stories.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. 292-8513. If you'd like to join us, if we're looking in particular for former Peace Corps volunteers who are in Central Ohio right now, share your story, share your challenges, share your anecdotes, share your struggles as we discuss the Peace Corps and its 50th anniversary. Kristen, the Peace Corps, there's no salary. You are a volunteer, I mean, in the truest sense of the word. You do get a monthly stipend for room, board, and few essentials. And the whole goal is to be you get enough to be basically the same as the folks you're living with, correct? And how big of an adjustment is that? And what kind of things did you have to adjust yourself to get used to that?
Great question. I think this is one of the most important things about Peace Corps, that, you know, you are sent to live at the level of the people you're going to serve or more collaborate with. And I think this was important because before I got to my community, I mean, there's all these preconceptions of what the American is. I mean, they watch TV, they see us on TV, and they think that all Americans are like that. So I think for them to see an American living at that level, that is what gets you into the community. It helps you integrate, and it makes your project so much more effective because you're living that life, you know, so that makes it more apparent, you know, what the needs are, what the opportunities are. And I think as Mary had mentioned, it's amazing how adaptable human beings are. When I first got there, even though I just recently got back from the Peace Corps, not a lot has changed in Ecuador, especially in the rural areas where I lived. We had electricity probably about 50% of the time, and we had to get water from rivers and whatnot. So, I mean, it was pretty basic, but I would say after a month or two, you know, it seemed so normal. And so it is amazing how adaptable people can be.
What kind of work did you do? You're in public health now as a grad assistant. Did you do public health in Ecuador as well?
I did, and that is actually what inspired me to get my MPH at Ohio State. So I was a rural public health volunteer. My main project was a project that we created working to prevent and control chronic diseases, hypertension, diabetes, obesity. These were diseases that were fairly new concepts to these communities because they had been, you know, battling with malnutrition. So they're starting now as, you know, development comes in, starting to see these chronic diseases. So that was the main project. But, I mean, we did everything from dengue, malaria, prenatal care for mothers, Every health need there, you know, we kind of touched on. So
we're talking about the Peace Corps on its 50th anniversary here on All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Wallace, you're a former Peace Corps volunteer. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello. Yes, I was a volunteer in Panama, you know, from 1966 to 1968.
Mm-hmm. So you're a contemporary of Stephen Hills here from the Fisher College of Business?
Yes, I believe we are, but we're still very involved in Peace Corps in different ways.
What kind of work did you do?
I was a home economist by training, and so that's what I did in the Peace Corps. I worked primarily with women's groups in women's development and also nutrition, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I began a vocational school for girls.
What's your favorite memory? What's the memory when people say, what was the Peace Corps like? What's the first thing you tell them?
Well, I think just the opportunity to really live in another country and to really get to know people. As everyone else said this morning, I think that is the thing that people most bring away from their experience. Mm-hmm. And it may not be what you plan to do when you get there, but that's what you take away with you, is just that incredible opportunity.
Okay. Thank you, Wallace.
And yes, but I did...
Sure. No, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to say one thing. I'm a member of a group of return volunteers here in Columbus, and I would like to, if possible, leave the website. It's very difficult for us to stay in touch with former volunteers, and we would encourage people to look at the website and let us know who you are here in Columbus. We are planning some other events throughout mm-hmm. the year to celebrate the 50th anniversary.
What is the website?
The website is CorvaPC.org.
Okay.
And if you would go there and give us your name, an email, phone number, where you were a volunteer in the years, then we can stay in touch with you.
Okay.
And let you know and invite you to some of the other things we're planning to mark the occasion throughout the year.
Great. Thank you, Wallace. And we will put that website, the link to that website, up on our webpage, wosu.org/allsides, and we'll put that link up there, too, for Peace Corps
Wonderful.
Volunteers.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wallace. 292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Particularly, we're looking for former Peace Corps volunteers, someone who can share their stories about their experiences and time overseas with the Peace Corps. Stephen, you know, you can live in another country. You can go to Europe and live in a nice, you know, hotel perhaps if you have enough money, or bunk in with another family, or rent an apartment. Why go to a place where there's no electricity and you know, less than ideal American living conditions?
I think it has to do with the challenge of what you might find there. It also has to do, I think we argue with our MBA students these days, with putting yourself in a totally different framework, which allows you to be much more innovative and think in a different way. So that is one of the benefits of Peace Corps, is that you are immersed in a different cultural setting and you begin to see the world differently.
Kristen, we had a caller, they dropped off, but they were concerned about safety. I think they had a loved one who was now volunteering somewhere. Did you ever worry about your safety?
That's a great question. I personally think that Peace Corps does a great job. Security is their number one priority, and they made that very clear to us all the time. Every Peace Corps volunteer, before starting their service, before, you know, going to a community by themselves, they have to complete at least a 10-week training. And in this training, there are a lot of competencies, and one of the most important is security. So there's a emergency action plan. You know, if you ever are feeling unsafe in your community, they're on call, Peace Corps staff. In Ecuador, we had an amazing Peace Corps staff, and I personally never felt unsafe.
When you got to your village or your small town where you were located, were you alone? Or did you have other Peace Corps volunteers with you?
I was alone. However, I lived with a host family for my first 3 months mm-hmm. to kind of set in. So that was very helpful. They were able to introduce me to everyone until I was able to establish myself, and then I moved into a little house.
And the language, did you take Spanish classes before you got there? And, of course, immersing yourself in the culture, you'll learn it pretty quickly, I'm guessing.
Yeah. No, it's funny that you say that. And to anyone listening who is studying Spanish, my best advice would be to immerse yourself in a country that speaks Spanish, because I had taken classes in high school and a couple classes in college, and so when I got there, I was like, oh, I'll be fine, mm-hmm. and I thought they were speaking another language. So
well, they were.
It was, well, other
from
than Spanish.
Studied, yes.
So that was definitely, I mean, I had studied it, and obviously the background had helped, I think, mm-hmm. but it was about 4 months until I felt that I could, you know, communicate, mm-hmm. so.
Have you continued your Spanish since you left?
I have.
Well, that's great. So that's, jump in like you're learning how to swim.
It's great. Yeah. And I mean, I think everyone can agree that, you know, America is becoming, you know, Spanglish more mm-hmm. and more every day. So, I mean, having, you know, the fluency in Spanish is going to be extremely helpful in public health.
We're speaking about the Peace Corps on its 50th anniversary here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann. You just heard from Kristen Mallory. She's a research associate in public health at OSU. She was in the Peace Corps in 2007 is when she joined. And also Stephen Hills. He directs the Fisher College of Business's Center for International Business and Education and Research. And he now coordinates the Fisher School's Peace Corps MBA program. Stephen, is it hard to get Peace Corps volunteers now, from what you hear from your students, and do you actively recruit them, or do you stay out of that?
When students come to me and ask me about the Peace Corps, of course, I very much enthusiastically endorse the Peace Corps. It's probably not my job as a professor to recruit for the Peace Corps, but at the same time, I very much share my experiences and encourage them to join. And a number of students have come. Every year somebody comes by, mm-hmm. and it is well known that I have been in the Peace Corps, so people feel comfortable in coming by to find out.
We have an email from Hal. He talks about his daughter, Katie. She was a Peace Corps volunteer in Bolivia. And Hal writes, he thinks the biggest thing besides a career choice toward local food production, the biggest thing she learned was an appreciation of how the United States appears to others. Kristen Mallory, did that surprise you how they view, you mentioned they see American as they're portrayed on television, but how did the Ecuadorians view Americans, and did that surprise you?
I mean, I think this varies a lot depending on country. In Ecuador, there was a pretty, especially in the rural areas, there was a pretty positive perspective on Americans. I mean, there's this excitement. When I got there, like I said, it was like, ooh, put the gringa, was, you know, what they call the Americans, put the gringa in front of everyone and dance. I mean, it was kind of like this, I don't know how you would describe it, like something special. So it was also kind of trying to take that away and sort of show, like, no, like, we're the same,
yeah,
you know?
More than just a novelty.
Exactly. You mm-hmm. didn't want to be put on that pedestal, and I feel like culturally that was, you know, kind of what they were used to doing, and I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, I mean, history, and then also what they view as American, as, you know, in TV and all of that I had mentioned. So mm-hmm. I didn't get a lot of negative stereotypes, I mean, aside from the, oh, everyone's, you know, lives in mansions and
yeah.
you know, all that kind of stuff. But I felt fortunate in that sense, and it was nice kind of being able to share my culture with them and, you know, do the ordinary things and, mm-hmm. you know, let them see an actual person.
Stephen, how about your experience in the mid-60s in Venezuela? The Peace Corps was brand new back then.
We were all very idealistic. Mm-hmm. We were very much influenced by President Kennedy. The Peace Corps was only 4 years old when I entered, mm-hmm. Our group was the second one to come to Venezuela, so it was all very new. It was exciting. We were explorers. We felt that we were doing something very, very different, and it was very energizing because of that.
Okay, thank you very much, Kristen Mallory and Stephen Hills, for joining us here as we look back at the 50-year anniversary of the Peace Corps on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Coming up after the break, the constant struggle between politics and the Peace Corps when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Former CIA operatives, husband and wife Robert and Dana Bear, know how to scan a crowd for assassins, how to use a gun, and how to escape when someone ambushes your car. And old habits die hard.
Well, when we drive, if somebody stops abruptly in front of us, I always look for where I'm going to ram the car.
On the next Fresh Air, we meet the Bears. They have a new memoir. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins at noon today on 89.7 NPR News. And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program begins. And we'll hear two points of view on legislation about abortion introduced in the Ohio General Assembly. Join us for that discussion beginning at 11 on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Ohio State's Comprehensive Cancer Center, rated exceptional by the National Cancer Institute. More information about Ohio State's Comprehensive Cancer Center is at cancer.osu.edu.
And it's 26 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies today and a high of 42. Clouds tonight and a low of 30 degrees. Clouds for Tuesday and a high of 53. There's a chance of rain Tuesday night and a low of 41. And rain showers are expected as we look ahead to Wednesday, a high of 50 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher with guest host Mike Thompson continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're talking about the Peace Corps as it celebrates its 50th anniversary. John F. Kennedy addressed the very first group of Peace Corps volunteers on August 28, 1961, as they prepared to depart for Africa.
And if you can impress them with your commitment to freedom, to the advancement of the interests of people everywhere, the influence may be far-reaching. And will go far beyond the immediate day-to-day task that you may do in the months that are ahead.
That's President Kennedy speaking to the first volunteers going to Africa in 1961. Joining us now is Stanley Meisler. He's the author of the book, When the World Calls, the inside story of the Peace Corps in its first 50 years. For 30 years, Stanley Meisler served as foreign and diplomatic correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, and in the early years of the Peace Corps, he was deputy director of its Office of Evaluation and Research. Stanley Meisler, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Well, very pleased to be here.
The Peace Corps, let me stress that word, peace, grew out of the Cold War. There was an ulterior motive when this started.
Oh, I'm sure there was, and you get a little bit of that even in the tape recording you just played. He sort of was stressing that they're going to be ambassadors for the United States, or for United States culture, as they go aboard. In fact, some of the first volunteers resented those remarks, or at least were quoted in the New York Times as saying, well, you know, we're not supposed to be ambassadors. We're just going to be teachers when we get overseas. So you always had this little hint of Cold Warism at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Soviets had, I think the remark I read was the Soviets had a lot of folks in other countries, and this was sort of to try to sort of keep up with that effort, to sort of counterbalance what was perceived as the spread of communist influence throughout the developing world.
Well, I think that was the president's original intention, but once the Peace Corps got started and once Sergeant Schreiber sort of set down the idea of where they were going and what they would do, so they soon realized that they would be hurt if they were looked on as official ambassadors of U.S. Of the U.S. government in any way, mm-hmm. and so the Peace Corps tried very hard after that not to be looked on as warriors, as Cold War. ambassadors.
We're speaking about the Peace Corps on its 50th anniversary. Our guest, Stanley Meisler, he's the author of When the World Calls, the inside story of the Peace Corps and its first 50 years. Stanley, how novel an idea, how unique an idea was the Peace Corps when it was established in 1961?
Well, it was, for a government agency, it was very unique. There had been a few proposals. There was legislation by Congressman Royce of Wisconsin and by Senator Hubert Humphrey of Minnesota suggesting to have that a kind of Peace Corps. And there had been various volunteer programs. The British had a couple, and the U.S. had small programs where private groups would go out for summer and help villages in Africa. But to have a large concentration of volunteers going out and for a long period, 2 years, that was pretty unique.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with Stanley Meisler, who's an expert on the Peace Corps, former Peace Corps employee on all sides with Ann Fisher and Mike Thompson sitting in. You know, Peace Corps volunteers are goodwill ambassadors. They're seen as helping developing countries and the folks who live there. But they, on occasion, came to oppose U.S. foreign policies. The U.S. invasion to the Dominican Republic under Lyndon Johnson was one. Vietnam, of course, was another. How did the volunteers didn't always sort of carry the party line in their service?
No, I think the first big indication of that was in the invasion of the Dominican Republic, because the volunteers were not pulled out. They stayed in the Dominican Republic, and as soon as reporters came down to cover the invasion, they found that the volunteers sided with the rebels against the military government, and felt that if the president was going to send troops to the Dominican Republic or help anybody, he ought to be helping the rebels. But of course, Johnson had been very wrongly advised and thought these rebels were communists who were going to present them with another Castro-like government. So.
And the volunteers' activism did not sit well with President Johnson.
Oh, he was furious, and he sent Peace Corps officials down to shut the volunteers up, and he kept talking about the volunteers trying to, gang up on him. The irony is that after a while, after things quieted down, he suddenly decided, well, maybe they're an advantage for me. And he went to the other extreme, where he wanted to increase the Peace Corps to counter the image of the United States caused by all the troops. So the Peace Corps would be the antidote to the War Corps. And so you had him, he in the White House, interfering with the Peace Corps on how many volunteers should go to this country. But his whole idea collapsed on that. It just wouldn't work.
Okay. 292-8513, if you'd like to join in our conversation. We're speaking with Stanley Meisler. He's written a book on the Peace Corps. We're looking at the Peace Corps 50 years after its establishment here on 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher. Margaret, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. I returned from Albania about a year ago. And I first of all want to say that the Peace Corps is not restricted to people just out of college. I did not go over until I was 60. So it's really interesting to go over to a country as an older volunteer and give your experience. But politically, it was fabulous to go to. Albania, of all of the communist countries, was the most isolated. And their dictator really controlled everything in the country. So they've been out of communism for almost 20 years now. And I got to observe their election, and they also got to observe our election.
Margaret, were you ever tempted to get involved in Albanian politics and in the controversy? You're not allowed to. But
no.
Were you ever tempted?
Sort of. I will say that my mayor of my little tiny town up in the mountains decided to run for election to be in the parliament. And I did support him, but I couldn't tell anybody I was supporting him. I just did it. Mm-hmm. I did it privately.
Okay. Thanks for the story, Margaret.
Okay.
Appreciate it. We're speaking with Stanley Meisler about the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps. Stanley, how active have Peace Corps volunteers become in the politics of their local country?
Well, in most cases, they try and stay out of it. I think they're pretty clear that, you know, that doesn't make sense for the Peace Corps. You do have examples of problems. Paul Theroux, who became a very distinguished American novelist, he was in Malawi in the early days of the Peace Corps, and he delivered messages for the opposition to the authoritarian president of the country, and he was thrown out of the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. So that's considered no-no. Where they do get involved in politics is when they're opposed to what the U.S. is up to, and you find many protests during the Vietnam War in countries where volunteers would have little rallies whenever an American official arrived. The Vice President of the United States would arrive, and the volunteers would have a little demonstration in town against the war in Vietnam, and that didn't go over too well in Washington, but it happened so often that it would be became almost impossible to stop.
So were there consequences at first, at least?
Yeah, they attempted to throw out one volunteer, and he went to court, and the federal court upheld his right to oppose policies of the U.S. government. You couldn't shut up an American citizen just because he happened to be a Peace Corps volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Peace Corps in those days decided it couldn't really stop anybody. All it could do was try and persuade volunteers not to disrupt their work.
Mm-hmm.
It still upset certain members of Congress and so on.
The Peace Corps
wasn't being done, but that was about the best they could do.
The Peace Corps, 50 years later, is our topic this hour on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Stanley Meisler is our guest now. He's written a book, When the World Calls, The Inside Story of the Peace Corps. Stanley, Richard Nixon, not a big fan of the Peace Corps.
Well, Nixon spent a number of years as president trying to destroy the Peace Corps. He really wanted to end it. The troubles it had, it was fairly popular, so he and his aides realized they'd have to move slowly. They talked about moving slowly. We should cut the budget. We should spread stories about how any embarrassing scandals we can find out about it.
What was his motivation?
I believe he just was so annoyed at this campaign pledge of John F. Kennedy, which became popular immediately, and then in the first year or two became a national phenomenon that everybody loved. In those days, Peace Corps was front page news almost every day, and the Americans loved the whole idea of it. And so I think it just irked him.
Mm-hmm. So he had a little bit of a grudge there.
Right.
The stereotypical Peace Corps volunteer is seen as someone who is more liberal, but that's not necessarily the case, and more and more so, conservatives are joining in the Peace Corps. Bob Taft, our former governor here in Ohio, is a Peace Corps volunteer.
Yeah, I think, in fact, when I remember, going around and meeting volunteers, more were liberal than not, but it wasn't that, it wasn't overwhelming. In the 60s, a lot of your most liberal students felt the fight, You know, fight was in the United States, not overseas. And you should get involved in voter registration drives in the South, not go off to Ethiopia and so on. So, you know, you had a fairly large number of volunteers who were probably, I don't know if they were conservative, they were more apolitical, and they may have ended up becoming pillars of the Republican Party, because you've had of your representatives in Congress, a number of them representatives in Congress who were former volunteers, a number of them were Republicans.
We're speaking about the Peace Corps as it celebrates its 50th anniversary. Stanley Meisler is our guest. He's an author who has written about the Peace Corps, also worked for the Peace Corps early on in its days. What role does the Peace Corps play now? Is it as strong an ambassador for the United States as it was, say, back in the 1960s?
Well, I think it's smaller. So in that sense, it can't be as strong. It's about half the size it was in the mid 1960s. At the same time, I think it's the volunteers are better trained. I think the volunteers get deeper into the culture, in the sense that most of the volunteers, or at least a large number of volunteers, are in villages by themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they're forced to be a part of the culture in order to survive. In the early 60s, sometimes volunteers would end up in a school in Ethiopia, for example, where there'd be a dozen volunteers, mm-hmm. and that made it very, very difficult.
Do we still need the Peace Corps?
Oh, I'm sure we do. There are many impoverished countries in the world, and there are many, many villages that don't have, enough help from their governments, to grow and develop.
Okay, and doing good deeds in other countries can't hurt Americans' image abroad. That's always a good thing, I suppose.
Well, I think that is. And, of course, they learn a great deal themselves and bring that back.
Absolutely.
To the U.S.
Stanley Meisler, author of the book, The Peace Corps, The Inside Story, on its 50th anniversary. Thanks for joining us on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.